Ashwin, six in the bank. Treadwell misses, Thorny misses, but it doesn't matter. India win the Champions Trophy in the air. Srishant takes it. India win.
Hello everyone and welcome to the DC Review System podcast, a brand new podcast which looks back at some of the iconic cricket moments and matches from the past. This is Tariq joining you along with my co-host Vinayak.
Hi guys, this is Vinayak here.
And of course, Live.
Hi Tariq, hi guys.
So we are just three cricket enthusiasts out of our, other than our jobs, who are looking to relive a little bit of past nostalgia and glory. But not just that, this podcast is also about looking back at matches and trying to place them in context, both in terms of the past as well as the future. So just to give you an idea as to how we are going to be approaching this podcast, every discussion is going to involve three acts. First act is going to be essentially setting the context for the match that we are reviewing and the game that or the moment that we are looking back on, just to put you into that time and place you into that zeitgeist of what was going on at that point of time and how we came to that moment that we are trying to talk about. And then we move on to act two, which is trying to relive the entire moment. So talking about the details of match series that we will be reviewing. And finally, of course, in act three, we kind of look ahead and examine the legacy that him leaves behind. Clive and Vinayak bring in tons of cricket watching and cricket writing experience to the podcast. Vinayak, as he says on his Twitter bio, is a second innings as a sports journalist and a huge cricket enthusiast. So that's Vinayak for you. Clive, of course, has been not only involved with the game of cricket in terms of analyzing and writing, but has been involved on ground as well as an analyst. So he's seen the game from all kinds of perspectives. And I have dabbled in a little bit of cricket watching, writing, analyzing, mostly at amateur levels myself. So that's the three of us. So gentlemen, Clive, shall we get started?
Clive, I think we should butt in there and say a little bit in quotes, you know. Tariq is trying to underplay himself here.
I'm trying to underplay myself so that going forward in the pod, complaints come against you guys.
Yeah, he's setting us up for failure. Yes. But yeah, Tariq is, you know, most cricket fans on Twitter would know Tariq for astute insights and specifically statistical take on the game. Who's one of the best, both Clive and Tariq, so I should mention that here. So I hope we have a good discussion, not just about what happened in a game. I think we should, most games that we pick would be games that everyone has seen, but what we can read around the game is what we'll probably look into doing in this podcast here, just to add to what Tariq said.
Yes, absolutely. So that's our objective. And gentlemen, we dive straight into the first game that we want to review. And it's not a coincidence that we are coming to you on this particular date in terms of the podcast. Why did you choose this date to premiere the podcast? That was Clive's choice, but it was a terrific choice in terms of the game that he wanted to pick. And the game, of course, is the iconic NatWest Trophy final of 2002. I think there isn't a soul around who is listening to this podcast thinking, what was that NatWest Trophy final of 2002? So I think the game really needs no introduction. Clive, we'll get started with you in terms of our first segment, which is trying to kind of set up that how did we get to that point in the game and what was going on in the cricketing world in 2002, and especially with India who were facing England in the final.
So basically what happened was that India went to England for this long series, this four match here, test series and a network series with Sri Lanka. So what happened before that was that India was not really, at that point, India was not a great ODI side. And unlike now, 18 years now, we can proudly say that India is a really good, well-off, mature ODI side. But at that point, India was one of the sides which could challenge, but not really the ones, you know, who could see like every time beat the top oppositions. So they went into England, you know, hoping to like cause an upset. Just to say that Sri Lanka and England are also not great sides. But if you look at the factor that England is playing at home and Sri Lanka was a better side than both those teams. Okay, the fact that India and England made it to the final just says that how India played the whole tournament. And let's not forget, this final was played just 8 months before the World Cup. So a win over here would have given India confidence that they can actually go and do big things in South Africa.
And of course, we have Vinayak joining as a very ironic third guest in this podcast, at least the inaugural one at any rate, because he has confessed that he did not actually see the game live.
Yes. So yeah, I was, 15 then? I was in 8th grade, I think. Ninth grade. Basically, I was in some school event in a village where there was no cable TV. And I'd seen the entire tournament leading up to the final. But the final, I had to be there at the event, which was very bad for a fan who took pride in watching almost all cricket matches back then, even in school. It was a big blow. Personally, I couldn't watch the match. But I didn't really have too many hopes, given India's record, typically, in ODI tournament finals. So I was like, okay, fine. I mean, I'd catch up on the report later. Big deal. Ganguly is going to lose another final. Leading up to the match, it didn't strike me as I'm going to miss something huge. But it's still, to this date, it's one of the biggest regrets of my life that I didn't watch that match live. So, yeah. Thanks for seeing this match.
That's the gap we're trying to fill, Vinayak. So, it's great to have somebody who's empathetic to that point of view. So, Clive, where did you watch the match? Because you are among the ones who have seen the match.
I watched it at home, actually. I was just 10 years old. And so, that time, basically, what happened was that I just started watching cricket. Like, cricket, at least in UAE that time, there was no easy way to watch cricket. Then this whole process started. My dad got the cable. The whole cable system era started that time for us as well in UAE. So then we started watching the games. So my first proper series which I watched was when England toured India just 6 months prior to this. I watched that whole tournament properly. Then I watched the West Indies tour. And then when they came to England, I was watching this. And so Hamara summer break starts in end of June, unlike India, because we are like when you guys are like having holidays, we have like classes that time, and then 2 months break, we have summer break. So that's the time when I was watching this final. And basically, when they scored 325, my dad was like, yeah, it's pretty much done. Okay, but I was like, chalo dekhte, and there's nothing else to do.
And I should mention how I watched it. It turned out to be a pretty expensive watch, because first half we saw in guest accommodation that we were staying. I was doing my MBA back in Delhi, and we watched the first innings. Then we went out for dinner, and unfortunately there was a project due the next day, so we had to go visit a cyber cafe to finish the project. So there were four friends of us who were working on four different computers, and obviously by the hour back then in a cyber cafe. After about the first hour, everybody abandoned the project and started looking at the TV in the cyber cafe. So about a couple of hours worth of cyber cafe dues were paid, but not a single bit of work was done. But as luck would have it was pretty worth it in terms of in terms of missing out all that.
What did you guys think about this? Like, England just toured India before that, and then Flintoff did that shirt removing business at Wankhede. Okay, so what did you guys think? Like, because I remember getting very angry at that whole. I was angry at the match, but then I had to remove it on Flintoff. So I was like, how could he do this? He's insulting our people and all that. So what did you guys think about all that prior as well? Like, that was one of the histories coming into the match.
So in my case, it was by the time I had a fairly broader perspective. I mean, given your age, Clive, at that age, I used to get pretty pissed off as well. There have been India-Pakistan matches where I've hurled stuff at people because somebody celebrated a Wasim Akram wicket. So stuff like that has happened. But by the time it rolled around, Flintoff taking his shirt off in Mumbai, you kind of could see where he's coming from in terms of the raw emotions spilling over and India is not a place where England have had a lot of success. And knowing Freddie Flintoff, the competitor, you know, you could kind of recognize the little bit of a footballer in him in that sense that, you know, he lets it boil over. So I was kind of okay with that. But obviously, as any half-decent cricket fan would, I was looking forward for a potential opportunity for revenge. So that's for sure.
And for me, the biggest memory about that was it was one of those unique bilateral series. It was 6 matches, if I remember right.
Yes, yes.
In India toured England. Is neither here nor there. Like one of those unique, weird bilateral series that had a number attached to it for whatever reason. And the fact that England came back in the last two ODIs to level it 3-3. If I'm right?
Yeah.
Correct. I think it ended up being 3-3, right? Yeah. So England, I think, it is safe to say that England is the team that most Indian fans grow up like disliking for various reasons. For me, that was the starting point of it. Like, I never really liked England as a side. That is probably the starting point of why that is the case, the six-match series. It's just, I mean, there's no rivalry or anything per se, but it's just England is like the team that everyone loves to hate. And I think that started for me in the lead-up to that address.
Yeah, but our dislike was kind of different because the teams better than us at that point were like Australia, okay, Pakistan, South Africa, and then you could say Sri Lanka. Like, those four teams, you could like really have no chance beating. So, you know, we couldn't have like India-Pakistan was rivalry for name's sake. Like, we would beat them in the World Cup. But, you know, it's like, hum log usko hara nahi sakte type thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least England, when it comes, like, England is like, you can't lose to England. They are as bad as us. How could we lose to them? And especially at home, it is like a insult kind of thing. Like, how did he lose to those guys? Yeah.
I think the fact that it became 3-3 after India were leading did hurt a lot. I think as a general fan of the sport, I think that series was very difficult to digest in terms of how it panned out. India should have won it. And
absolutely. I mean, India set up nervous. India made blowing 3-1 series lead school before the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
And that match also we lost chasing as well.
So, just to bring in a couple of more stats into the picture and in terms of the setup here, leading up to this match, I think India had not had a lot of success in finals. I think Clive's dug out the stat here, which says that they had 17 wins in 40 finals in multi-team events. But more importantly, India had lost, I think, 8 or 9 finals coming into this game. So, there was a streak, like Vinayak was saying that, you know, this is just going to be another final we're going to lose. It's nice to kind of get to the final. India had made a habit of the I series and matches like these. I think except for Sachin inspired win in the Coca-Cola Cup, we really did not have much to look back in terms of multi-team final performances. Not least the 2000 Champions Trophy, where surely it was there for the taking.
Exactly.
And not for the first time we'd let New Zealand break our hearts at an ICC tournament.
Actually, for the first time, right?
It just happened
20 years later again. Let's not go there. We don't want Clive to leave this podcast.
So, those were the scenarios as we got into this game, and India's record while chasing against big teams like these wasn't too great either. Actually, this was about 6 or 7 games under 500. Again, stat says 14 wins and 21 losses against teams like Australia, South Africa, England, West Indies, and so on. So, and lastly,
since 2000, right?
Yeah, since 2000.
Just since 2000.
Yeah, since 2000. The ODIs plays between 2000 and, of course, leading up to the Lord's Final in 2002. I think
in terms of what we are trying to do here, in terms of the context, for younger fans who are listening, I think this is probably the most important thing that the NatWest Final changed, I think. Because current generation fans, probably the teenagers or the ones who were born post-NatWest are used to India chasing matches and winning. That was never the case. For us growing up, India chasing and winning was a big, big deal. I think for those who don't understand why the NatWest final is so important, I think this stat right here sums it up. I think, you know, India, whether it was a big tournament or not, any bilateral series chasing was a big deal, especially and then to do this 300, I think that's...
India were so bad at chasing that even my mom used to tell them that if they won the toss, please bat. So
there were exceptions, I think, in terms of there was one other 300 chase that we had done. That was 90, 98, right? Not 98. The Independence Cup, India-Pakistan?
98.
That is 1998.
I think there was one case of India chasing 300, but I mean, that's rare.
And the 1998 match was also full of drama. Who went down to the last over.
Bad light and all that.
It was played in bad light. Rules were flouted left, right and center in terms of how many overs of a game would it be just to finish the game out there. But so that brings us, of course, down to that lovely July day in 2002 when England and India walked out to play that final at Lord's. I think it was quite a picture because the traditional setup there was just changing. England relatively recently used to have one-day series which were played with the red ball. This was probably, as far as I can recall, one of the first multi-team international tournaments which was being held in England, and colored clothing, white ball, etc. It still was a day game at Lord's, but nonetheless, it had all the other trappings of a proper modern one-day game as we have come to know it. Or a modern
the 99 limited. World Cup was there, but yeah.
Of course, the 99 World Cup was there. But I guess it would be the first sign that England was waking up to the potential of the limited overs game.
Correct.
More than perhaps usual. So we are at the point where we now have to dive into the game, and this is going to be the most fun part because it's like Vinayak mentioned, is a milestone game, and if anybody who has not grown up knowing about this game or has not seen it, or you know, like you rightly said, has been born after it, because you know, anybody after that match, if you're listening to the podcast, you are eligible to vote now. So in terms of
the match turns 18.
In terms of putting up the context, it was a thrilling match to watch eventually, but I think the thrill, like sort of, you know, Indiana Jones movies, has become even more sweeter in watching it in hindsight. Because the narrative ebb and flow is even more fun to consider when we are kind of slightly removed from it.
I can't imagine it being too much fun to watch live. I mean, I can only speculate since obviously I didn't see the match. But I can, like, I'm guessing for the 100 overs, probably for, you know, 70, 80 of them, England were on top, you could say, right? I mean, so it might not have been fun to watch live with India behind the eight ball for most of it. There was a period when, you know, at halfway stage, when England made 325, even Ganguly admitted, right? I mean, in one of the interviews that he gave later, he said, you know, one more final gone. These are Ganguly's words.
When the Indian captain, that kind of sums up.
Yeah, that kind of sums the Indian captain who is all about belief, you know, the first word that comes to your mind when you think of Ganguly is belief. And here's a guy saying all these years later that at halfway stage, he thought the match was gone, right? I mean, for most of it, India were behind the eight ball. So I cannot imagine it being too much fun for those who watched it live.
You know, which is why the hindsight makes it so much, so much more fun.
You know, one thing I noticed about this match, right? Like, if you talk to every cricketer about it, like who was involved in the match, they didn't actually believe that India was going to win. Okay, Yuvraj Singh, Tendulkar, Sehwag, all at some point or the other have actually mentioned it, that when they scored 325, we thought that this was a chase too much for us as well. And then, like, and especially after what happened when we lost 5 wickets, they believed that the game was done. Okay, so much so that Mohammad Kaif's parents decided to go and watch Devdas instead of watching their son bat in the final. So it was that much, like, India's self-belief in themselves at that point was non-existent.
And we should remind everybody, this is a relatively deep batting lineup. As in, and again, in terms of current hindsight and what we've seen in the game in the last few years, this looks, it looks ridiculous to think the game was over back then. But like Vinayak rightly set up the context that given how India were at that point of time, it was not surprising at all.
See, I have some stats. 300 plus chases before that match were only one, like 107 times they were attempts, and they were only 7 wins. And
correct.
India's record in that is two wins out of 15 attempts. So you pretty much knew, like, where we are coming from, like, you know, data behind us and all that. You know how India's chances were at that match. So that was what was like, yeah, that you could understand their belief that why they didn't give themselves any chance.
I think one of those things that has remained a problem for India has been death bowling. I think that was also evident in this match. Quite a few runs were conceded in the last 10 overs, if I remember.
Yeah, 81. Right.
81? Almost eight runs an over, right? Yeah. And to let Nazir Hussain score his first ODI century and the runs that they took in the last 10, it was just all setting up for, you know, another defeat, so to speak.
Another heartbreak.
I think what doesn't get talked about as much, I think, about the match itself is Ganguly's innings. I think everyone, the moment Natra's final is spoken about, it's all about Ganguly's shirt twirl and Yuvraj and KF and, you know, how he bounced back from 5 down. I think the Ganguly innings needs to be talked about a little more. I think it is the innings that actually enabled KF and Yuvraj the time that they took in the initial part of the partnership, and the run rate was still not, required run rate didn't shoot up like crazy. Even when we were rebuilding, I think that Ganguly innings played a big role in that, right? I think it's something that not talk about as much.
Which is something that we will focus on and we will get into, because we are now on to the second phase, which is getting into the match itself. And like you guys have already mentioned some of the points, the basic idea was that England batted first and got to 325, of course, mainly led by a great innings from Nazir Hussain, which is remembered. But then again, I think people tend to forget that there was another 100 in that game as well.
Trescothick, yeah.
Yeah, and that as well from Trescothick was like a quick fire century. 109 of 100 balls, which at that time, like, you expect these innings really from Sri Lankan players or, you know, like a certain Shahid Afridi. But Trescothick came, set the momentum for England, and then there was no looking back. That even allowed Nazir Hussain to take his time in the middle and, like, you know, milk the Indian bowlers. Even though, like, Nazir Hussain has traditionally been a slower ODI batsman, but one thing we should remember is that before this match, there were real question marks of Nazir Hussain, the ODI batsman, the setup. So they were like questions that should he even be in playing, like, forget batting at three, should he even be playing in the playing 11? And then he scored that century and he had that famous three finger gesture towards the stands. So that is why I think, you know, that whole focus went from Trescothick century to Nazir Hussain century.
See, he made it more memorable that way. And of course, we had a quick fire innings from Andrew Flintoff as well, which kind of pushed England over the 300 mark. His innings was also reasonably quick fire, 40 of 32 balls. Again, in this day and age, that might not look like a big deal. A strike rate of 125 is just about average. But it actually evidently wasn't back then. And of course, Clive's very favorite Facebook friend, Ronnie Rani, scored a few quick runs, just 10 of 7. But again, all were useful runs. Although towards the end, maybe England would have thought that 330 plus is what they would have been perhaps aiming at. But you would think they would have thought 325 is probably good enough given the conditions. Everybody accepted that the batting conditions are excellent and Lord's is actually a pretty small ground, which is something that people sometimes miss. But you would think England would imagine they have enough against a batting lineup like India's?
Yeah, I mean, I would say on paper, India's batting lineup was good, but the context, like we have already discussed, you know, it having Tendulkar all these years, even that didn't matter that much in on some of the big matches. You know, it usually was him or no one else, right? I think Tendulkar batting at four, whether that was the period where he was actually doing well at four. He had two centuries in that tri-series alone leading up to the final. Tendulkar at number four was not scoffed upon at that point of time. I mean, it didn't pan out later on a couple of times, but at that point, it was like a good move to have Tendulkar at number four and Sehwag and Ganguly opening and all that. But still, I mean, on paper, it was a good team, but 325, like we have already established, was, I think, a little too much. And that's where I think the start that Ganguly and Sehwag gave played a huge role in India eventually getting across the
line. So that's where I want to bring in your viewpoint, Vinayak, because we are getting to the start of the Indian innings. And of course, what a blistering start it was. And now you can talk about your favorite thing in detail, which is that blazing innings that Ganguly played.
Exactly. I think it's almost impossible to think India would have won the match if Ganguly had not played that innings. I didn't watch the match live, but my thing is, every time Natra's final highlights is on TV, I watch it, right? Almost as if to make up for the number of times, make up for missing it live. I just make sure that I don't miss it if the highlights is on TV. And it was on even like a couple of days ago on Ganguly's birthday. The highlights were being shown and it just struck me that how Ganguly was a man on a mission. He knew that India needed a good start. in order to have a chance of winning this match. And to outscore Sehwag is not a big, it's not a small thing, right? Even for Ganguly, to significantly outscore Sehwag was a big deal. And I think he said that opening partnership set it up irrespective of how it eventually played out.
And I think we should mention here in terms of a stat that Ganguly's strike rate was about 140, which was higher than anybody in the entire match. Score 60 runs at 140 strike rate in a chase which required you to score at about 110 in terms of 100 ball strike rate was really great. And like Vinayak rightly pointed out, this particular innings had given India enough runs and given them quickly enough for them to maybe recalibrate this chase, because suddenly you are looking at ending the power play in the 15th over. I think Ganguly fell just about in the 15th over.
Yeah.
And India already had 100 plus on board. So it was just 200 and change to get in the remaining 35 overs. So suddenly you are thinking of the chase a lot differently than you would have thought about it if it had been, let's say, 8-4-1.
Yeah. So basically what was the thing was that Ganguly's chase, what I really like about Ganguly's chase was that he looked like a man who could actually, if everything was coming off. There was this one cut shot for six he played off Lintoff, okay, which is a glorious shot. If you catch the highlights, you should watch it. It was a glorious shot. So it looked like he was definitely getting everything. Everything he was aiming for was working right. Even that when his dismissal, it was just slightly very unlucky that it just clipped the stumps as well. He knew that if India get a good start over here, India could chase this down. And more so because you have like batsmen who start slow with Tendulkar, Dravid, Mungia. So you give them also more breathing space to come in. It's not like they are straight walking into a pressure situation that the required run rate is already 6.5 or about. They have that leeway, you know, okay, we'll go slowly about, we'll get set and then we'll score our quick runs. So Ganguly's innings gave them that. But the sad thing which happened was straight after the power play, India had a collapse, which was, I don't know, expected.
So can we talk about the collapse and can we bring it? So this was India were kind of going swimmingly at 114, I think is when Ganguly fell. 106 actually, in the 15th over. But then can we please talk about Sehwag's shot selection? I know he's not really known for that, but even by Sehwag's standards.
It was a very lazy shot to get out again. He wanted to get out. That was a very lazy shot. But
it was basically a nothing ball from Ashley Giles, like, exactly. I don't think so. He was basically just trying to control runs and then he played that shot. Like, it was a really bad shot for the situation.
And after that, of course, we had Dinesh Mungia and Rahul Dravid also getting out. Like Clive said, they are relatively slow starters. They're obviously middle order batsmen, more steadier in that sense. To take nothing away from their talent otherwise, but in this case, tried to force the issue. Both of them played shots where they looked like they were trying to forcibly quicken the pace in terms of scoring runs and got out. And of course, then Tendulkar took the likeness to Sehwag to another level, because can we please talk about the Tendulkar shot selection now?
I think Tendulkar, it's a little more understandable because you could see what he was trying to do. He has done that to Ashley Giles. That has been his go-to strategy for Ashley Giles, I would say, right? To give himself room and then kind of the negative line, quote-unquote, that Nazir Hussain and Ashley Giles were popular for. Tendulkar's way of countering it was giving himself room and playing it over the offside. He's done that with success in the past. So, it was not really a bad shot selection. It just didn't come off, I think. I think Sehwag was more of, the ball was on the off stump and he was just trying to cut and it didn't work out. But Tendulkar was more of the extra line that he just missed.
And I think Tendulkar was slightly deceived in terms of both the flight and the length. At least from the viewing, it kind of looks like that. Although it's kind of hard to fathom Tendulkar being deceived like that by a spinner, because we all know what he's capable of. Sehwag's, like classic Sehwag, his foot movement was zero on the shot that he tried. But again, the thing is that there are times when he pulls it off. But this leaves us with India around 5 wickets down for 146. And this is,
that's,
I remember,
the moment
this
was when collectively all TVs were switched off, most of the TVs were switched off in India.
Literally were, because this is exactly when my friend reminded me that our industrial relations professor expects the
project tomorrow. And I think we better be getting.
That's when you got reminded. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe we need to do better things from here.
This is where the opportunity cost flips in terms of spending an extra minute with the game versus.
No, and exactly, you know, like I still can't get over it. Like, so this is the exact moment when Mohammed Kev's parents, yeah, their son is now going to walk out to bat, okay, decide that we rather go and watch Shah Rukh Khan's Devdas, okay, which turned out to be a hit as well. We'd rather go watch Devdas than watch
to bring that.
They didn't even wait for him to come to the crease. They just switched off the TV and left for the cinema.
One of those crazy,
so clearly, as in this, honestly, this makes us all feel a little less guilty about switching off the TV at that point of time.
It was because KFK parents ne khud bol diya, agar Tendulkar ne kar paya to hamara londa kya karega usme.
So they walked in with India at 146 for 5. India basically needed, I think, around 179 from that point. And it's basically another 29 overs to go. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Clive at the point that when we look at the match in terms of hindsight, this was a proto T20 chase happening here, because what India had just been set was, you know, a kind of a T20 target in terms of difficulty and what they needed to do at that point.
Yeah, and this match was played right before the T20 era kickstarted in England. Like 2003 was when the first T20 was played. So in any team chasing at 7 runs and over was never a likelihood at that point. Okay, and then you have these two youngsters. Like, I think Yuvraj Singh played just under 40 games, and Kev just made his debut like 2 years back, and he had not even played 20 games. So these are two guys. One more thing you need to understand, the context is like, these guys don't play, like youngsters in that era didn't have much big game practice. Like now you have the IPL, so you know how to go about, you have the whole crowd watching you, so you know how to go about chases, and the transition is easier from IPL cricket to go and play international cricket, because you're used to the pressure at that point, right? But these guys, okay, like, yeah, they had won an under-19 World Cup, but still, an international match is much more different than what you play in first-class cricket, or list A, whatever. So these guys are relatively youngsters, and more so by India, everyone believed that this is a chase really out of our hands at that point.
So Vinayak, in with the benefit of hindsight and the fact that you had the luxury of watching the replays of the match, knowing how it would turn out, what strikes you most about Yuvraj and Kev's approach at that point of time when you see the game now?
I think I touched upon it briefly. I think it helped them rotate the strike a lot in the initial stage of the partnership. The fact that the run rate was not, you know, a 9 or a 10. Required rate was not, you know, out of reach per se. You know, they could take their time a little bit in terms of rotating the strike. I think Yuvraj also spoke about that in one of his interviews, that, you know, England allowed Yuvraj and KF to rotate and, you know, take some time to get into their innings before they could actually just go ballistic towards the later part. I think that was one thing that that stood out. You know, you don't watch that in the highlights. You don't get to see that in like a 10-minute video clip that if you go on YouTube and watch it now, it'll be just, you know, Yuvraj and Kev banging, bang, 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 4-4, 6-6-6 and all that. But I think it's that start of that partnership that really gave a platform for those two to go at the end. I think that worked out for them.
It was a bit of a slow burn chase. Particularly, actually, their partnership itself was a little bit of a slow burn in that sense, given the rest of the hectic of the game. Like Mac is rightly saying, it brought out little things that they did right, which is not play too many dot balls, keep rotating the strike, take those opportunities and keep up with rate, and not let it get such a high extent that they have to play shots that they do not want to play. Basically, playing the percentages there. And describe it like Vinayak rightly said, it cannot be gauged from a 10-minute clip or a highlight, mainly because it feels as if they came all guns blazing. They necessarily did not. They picked their deliveries that they wanted to hit, the shots that they were sure of. You know, it's kind of like a slow burn and then a satisfying climax, but it's like going and describing a Quentin Tarantino movie by only describing the last 10 minutes
of
the blood and gore finale.
Yeah, Nasir Hussain also mentioned this in like, he believes that if he had a chance again, he would have tried to kill off the game at that very point. But the thing is that he decided to take like a back step, you know, and play the game longer. So he just let them score freely. And then by the time he decided that this partnership has gone on for too long is when both these guys were set and they decided to attack.
So just another thing that we need to talk about here is, I think what one of the very important features of Ganguly's captaincy in ODIs is having Dravid as a keeper that allowed him to play KF as the batsman, KF or Yuvraj or Dinesh Mongia, who were the extra batsmen in the lineup that India could play and just play four proper bowlers. I think that was also a significant moment in that game plan that, you know, we saw in later in the 2003 World Cup with Dravid keeping wickets. It's, I think this match would have played a huge role in, you know, Ganguly thinking, yes, this is the way to go.
Yes, and the thing and Dravid keeping just happened the series before in the West Indies. Was the first time, because I remember I was watching and I was like, why is he standing up to Zahir Khan? And you know, Dravid being the selfless man and always a team man decided that, yeah, I don't mind keeping. Okay, because India's keeping options were pretty pathetic at that point. Ajay Rathra, then Parthiv Patel later came in the frame, but those are not really guys you could actually take to the World Cup and build your team around, unlike Dhoni. We are pretty blessed right now with wicket keepers.
I think the fact that KF came in at 7 and the chase was successful played a big role in Ganguly's success as an ODI captain. I think that is also another, I'm probably skipping ahead a little bit in terms of looking at the legacy of this match. But yeah, talking about the Yuvraj-KF partnership, I think that is one of the standout features, that the fact that the 6-wicket partnership and you had two proper batsmen out there. It could have been amazing otherwise.
And of course, we should also remember that the KF-Yuvraj partnership did not really take the game completely away from England, because Yuvraj got out for 69 at, I think the score was 267 for India. Yeah. So which means there were 58 odd runs still to get at more than 6 and over. There were, I think, 8 overs and change left, 50 balls or so. With just, remember, that's just 3 wickets left now, and the batsmen to come are not the greatest batsmen around. So, you know, suddenly there was extra responsibility for KF, and if you are England, you are thinking again that, okay, we have got the breakthrough that we needed.
Yeah, 4 wickets left at the point Yuvraj got out.
Sorry, Yuvraj is the
6 wicket to go down. Yeah, but I mean, Harbhajan Kumble, Zahir Khan and Ashish Nehra don't really inspire confidence per se. I mean, Harbhajan and Kumble can do their thing with the bat on the rare occasion. But like you rightly said, I think England would have still fancied their chances when Yuvraj Singh got out. So the KF part, the KF part of the last 50 runs or so is very significant.
And of course, that began with a partnership with Harbhajan Singh, who scored a very useful 15. So after that, incidentally, the game had a final twist also, because once again, Harbhajan's innings seemed to have put it past England, but India allowed England back in once again by losing a couple of wickets. Bajji getting out to Flintoff, and then Anil Kumble playing a rather terrible shot again and getting caught behind. So
he should have been out the ball before run out. And then the next ball he got out. It's like a very poor cameo from Anil Kumble. Dreadful two-ball cameo from Anil Kumble. Anil Kumble managed to play two balls and both of those featured in the highlights.
So at this point in the match, okay, at what point did you actually think India has a chance of winning this now?
So interestingly, I was the moment Harbhajan got out as well, I was kind of still confident, because by the time of what had we had seen of KF, and you know, he was not a batsman we had seen a lot of, or I knew a lot about, but he seemed confident enough that they would be able to knock those runs away. But then flashback that I got was India's World Cup match against Zimbabwe in 1999. That group game was again a classic chase that was botched, where India had the game under control and then somehow contrived to lose it by 9 runs or so, I think. And that's what I was thinking, that they should not make that mistake because the asking rate was under control. So at that point of time, like every traditional cricket watcher, the moment the asking rate fell below about 6 or thereabouts, you would think that that's doable. So I was still thinking it is all right, even after Kumble actually got out. All I was thinking was, all they have to do is make sure that KF gets maximum of strike. So I was kind of slightly, perhaps more confident than most people were at that point.
Yeah, I first believed that India had a chance just before Yuvraj Singh got out. So I believe like they both are striking the ball well, or their runs are also flowing. So I was like, okay, there's a lot of happening over here. But then when he got out, okay, that still that part came that these are the tail enders. Because just remember, like 6 months prior in January at Wankhede, these guys lost a chase even then with India requiring around 20-25. I don't remember, but they still lost a chase even then with the tail enders not providing anything. So I'm pretty sure these guys got the flashback of that match as well. And Flintoff still was bowling overs over there. But then came like that KF's innings. KF scored like a 6 or 4 here and there. And even Bhaji scored
that full shot over mid-wicket. I think for me, like just watching back, that six that KF hit over mid-wicket, and there was a outside edge that went for 4 of Darren Goff.
Yes.
I think those were the moments that you know that, you know, okay, the luck is on India's side.
Exactly. I'll tell you another flashback I had, or not exactly a flashback. I should say flash forward, because I think it happened in a series later. There was a game in New Zealand where India needed like 7 runs off the last over, and Kumble got one of those quickers through either third man or fine leg, which went for 4, and India managed to squeeze past New Zealand in that game. Vinayak is totally right that those are the omens that you look for in a chase like this or a match like this, where you're thinking, yes, this is where it is happening. And I think those 4 runs off the outside edge were very, very crucial, because it really reduced the pressure in terms of, I'm not exactly sure how many runs were required at that point. I think it was down to single digits. It was the last delivery of an over, and KF was actually trying to get back strike, which meant that Zahir Khan would have to face the next over.
And that too from Flintoff as well. So it was just like, again, like 2 runs required, 6 balls, Flintoff bowling to Zahir Khan. So that whole thing was happening again.
And of course, 2 runs required of like the last few deliveries. Again, we have all seen the 99 World Cup. So we know the Australia-South Africa game. So it's kind of never really completely assured in games like these. But again, I go back to my point about my superstition that if it's sort of under 6, it should be under control, and it's unlikely that the team's going to go and watch it. And thankfully, India did not.
I think the fact that Ganguly, Flintoff was bowling that over when India won, I think that also adds to the drama, the whole Ganguly-Flintoff.
So basically,
the fact that the winning runs were hit of Flintoff's over.
No, basically, when the final over started, even that first 2 balls had a lot of drama in it, because Zahir, I think, played and missed the first one, and then the second one was a wide, okay, which was not given. And that
was the camera pans to Ganguly at that point.
Yeah.
Ganguly was swearing, right? Like, you couldn't miss what he was saying on TV.
In those times,
it was actually, to Steve Buckner's credit, I think it was the right decision. I think Zahir Khan was playing at the 6th stump, and the ball went over like stump, but Ganguly didn't really see it that way.
Yeah, obviously, and that time it was that, well, it's not like current ODI cricket where anything down the leg is a wide, even it's marginal.
Yeah.
That was like test match umpiring in those days. So there was no reason for the umpire to give it wide. Okay, and then the final ball of the match.
And of course, I think the final ball also kind of shows the fact that there was an overthrow, and India got the second run, also kind of shows that England by that time had really been scrambled in terms of how they were approaching this game, given how they were in the first 20-22 overs versus how they had been over the last few, because they seemed genuinely rattled and it as if the match was theirs by right, and it was just being stolen under their nose and they could do nothing about it.
Correct.
Yes, exactly. And this is India's like another final win, you know, in after the 1983 World Cup. So after 19 years, this is another win at Lord's. So that also is one thing which comes. And then after the whole thing which happens, Ganguly decides to take out his shirt. And the original story about this was that when they got close, Ganguly went to Lakshman, to Tendulkar and Dravid. This is something which I've heard, is that he told all of them, let's remove our shirts and celebrate. Okay, yeah. And then Dravid was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And Tendulkar is that superstitious guy who sits away if he finds a spot and India is doing well, so he sits over there. So he was not into this. So Ganguly kind of gave up on that idea. But when they won, he couldn't control his emotions. And then the shirt came out.
Interestingly, 2 days back, I was listening to his interview with Mayank on BCCI.tv. Mayank Agarwal asked him, who do you think from the current squad would take their shirt off in the Lord's balcony if such a win had happened? And Ganguly's response was immediate, all of you. He just said all of you would do it.
So that's, and thanks for that nugget, Vinayak, because that is the perfect segue into the third and the final bit of this pod, which is the legacy that this game leaves, where we kind of look at the era in ODI cricket for India, sort of, you know, before this final and after this final, in a sense, and the whole level of confidence. I mean, India may have lucked their way into this win because, you know, these were two teams who were hell-bent on losing to each other somehow on that day, because despite having advantages, nobody was driving it home at most points, and both teams lose the advantage at different points in time. Eventually, once the game was done, it was in the books, and it became a bit of a cornerstone or a rallying cry that everybody would look back. And like we said, this becomes that inspirational thing that you can now look back in hindsight and keep giving out as an example that if we can do this, we can, you know, do anything else, which definitely, like Clive pointed out, would have played into India's strategy and Ganguly's thinking in the 2003 World Cup in South Africa, where despite a less than great start, India managed to make it to the final. That final is unlikely to be ever featured on this podcast.
In terms of legacy, I would even go as far as saying that, you know, India's win against Pakistan in the 2003 World Cup might not have happened if this final had not happened. I would go as far as saying that, you know, to know that, you know, you've been there and done that in a high pressure game against a decent opponent, and you've
in a high chase.
Chased down the score. And you have chased down a score, I think that just gives you the confidence to know, right? I mean, 275 in a World Cup is not a big deal.
Yeah, and
right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. Like Vinayak is saying, is that belief, that thing is, but like, as you have mentioned, all these guys during the match said that they didn't believe they were going to win. But once this happened, okay, it got in every Indian system, like the team and the players, that if we could do NatWest, okay, then we have it in us to even chase our totals as well. So that belief kind of came in, that even though if India would have lost this final, it would have been a much more different scenario. People would have thought that, yeah, it's not in our system. We can't do it. It's not, whatever we tried, we couldn't chase. But now that this win was in them, okay, there's that belief that, yeah, we can chase down big totals. Okay, 300 plus is a possibility. Our youngsters can do it. Even though if the situation is tough, we'll find a way out to chase down these totals. So when that Pakistan match happened, there were still India lost wickets. Okay, and it's still a tricky chase. But Dravid and Yuvraj found it back because they knew, they had the belief that we just chased down a bigger total. This is much more easier. So that belief comes into play. And stats, numbers don't talk about this, but belief plays an important part in any sports person's career. Once, because I've been around teams where, you know, once they start believing in themselves, then the whole dressing room is something different. So that is something which is very important. And this win was, I think, the biggest thing which helped India at that point. And this is Ganguly's biggest legacy, even though his record as a captain is decent, not the best compared to what people who came after him, but the legacy that he as a player and as a man manager, you know, put into this team and this chase specifically is the most lasting legacy of, I think, Ganguly's captaincy in Indian cricket.
And there is one other aspect to this, that eventually then India would actually start becoming known for their ability to chase. Under Dravid, eventually they would, you know, have those, I forget the exact number, but like a dozen or so matches, which was an uninterrupted run of successful chases. So, that entire
the period when Dravid won the toss and chose to chase.
Irrespective of the pitch, right? He used to say, like, he had this thing that I just wanted to make sure that we get into the habit of chasing. So that is what he always did. That even if the pitch was suitable for batting first, you'd be like, nahi, chase karna hai.
So I mean that flipping of the narrative from then. Now is probably the game's greatest legacy, and that's why, like Vinayak pointed out, that this is something that should be required reading and viewing for young Indian cricket fans, especially fans who like to reflect on the sport and write about it and so on. This probably is a great history lesson to understand what Indian cricket, especially in the limited overs arena, has achieved in the last 18-20 years or so. Especially post this game, despite the usual ups and downs, in terms of just simply how fans would think about games, like Clive said, and of course, teams themselves, like again, I pointed out, that's something the stats don't always capture. but that's where the game goes kind of beyond the numbers, so to speak.
But you know, the saddest part of all this is like that chase happened. That's a very unlikely chase. Okay, and now in the last 5 years, India comes as a chasing side, built proper chasing side. Like they can chase huge totals as well. And our last two semifinals of World Cup losses are by chasing. Like the thing
where our biggest strength has betrayed us. Yeah, like, on the biggest stage.
Don't forget Champions Trophy final, Clive.
Oh God.
It's a trifecta of heartbreaks for Clive.
The worst thing is that all this, you know, like we chase, like you see them chase in bilateral matches, you're like, wow, they can. This team, like at that point, couldn't chase. Now they are able to chase with so much ease. And then when you go to these matches and then you're like, yeah, we can chase this down. And then they don't chase it down. It's like a different level of heartbreak. So knowing that we are here, why are we not chasing this?
So maybe NatFest, the final should be blamed for all of this, not celebrated. To change the expectations. You should blame that final for all.
Expectations, they're always...
The narrative has flipped.
We have double flipped the narrative.
Exactly.
We started with one.
Oh, God.
Don't flip the burgers that many times at McDonald's, I think.
Exactly.
So eventually, gentlemen, we're almost out of time on the pod review, but your final thoughts about this game and the whole win at that point of time.
Sure. So I think one of the biggest things for me that I still remember, like I said, is the Ganguly innings with the bat. I think that doesn't get the credit it deserves. I mean, NatWest is always about Yuvraj, Kev and the Ganguly shirt twirl. I think the Ganguly innings with the bat should also be talked about in the same vein. I think that is one of the biggest takeaways for me from that final. And it was also nice to see that they gave the man of the match to Mohammad Kaif, even though he didn't get the century. That was, they could have easily given it to one of the centurions, but it was nice to see Mohammad Kaif get the man of the match. And I think it was one of those matches that made you really like Mohammad Kaif as a cricketer, you know, less flashy, a guy who goes about his job really well. I mean, a great fielder and all that. But I think that match endeared Kaif to a lot of Indian fans in terms of, you know, you don't have to be the flashiest of batsmen to do a job for the side. I think for me, I fell in love with what Kaif offered as a batsman from that.
Yeah, my biggest learning from that match is that, yeah, okay, Kaif chased it down. But before that match, you know, Kaif was just, I saw him as just a guy who could save a lot of runs in the field. Like, India was a pretty poor fielding side at that point, and he was a guy coming, diving in, they're saving runs and could bat a little. But that whole match, you know, flipped my perspective into, like, this guy can bat, this guy can actually win us games. So that is one thing. Then the other thing is that India has a capability now. Like, just imagine that if our big guns also get going, then India has more likelihood of scoring such wins on their plate. And as Vinayak said, Ganguly's innings, you know, we all remember the last 10 overs. That is how we all are built. We always remember the end, but we don't talk about, you know, how the chase was started. Ganguly's innings played a huge part in making the... Even though it was just 60 runs, like 1/5 of the whole total, but it played a huge part in getting the rest of the batting going, you know, getting that time in. So all these things, at the end of the day, matter. And my biggest benefit from this match was that India believed, like honestly started believing in themselves as a team that could, you know, chase games. They went ahead and, you know, at Champions Trophy, okay, even though they were games like that South Africa game in the Champions Trophy, even though it was a game looked completely out of our hands, India never let it slip, believing that, you know, nothing is decided at the last ball of the match. So India's belief came that we can win close games. That belief got stronger under Dravid, got stronger under Dhoni. And now, like, we see this well-rounded side, okay, who plays at that for a certain period, ICC tournaments, they used to play with no fear. Okay, but all this started with this match that, yeah, we can chase these totals. Yeah, we can do it. And the game is not over till we let it get over.
And just to wrap it up, my biggest learning from the game was that if your industrial relation professor tells you to submit a 100-page project, don't really read through the entirety of it. Because you can imagine how we finished the project in the remaining time in the night, submit the next day. And I think we got a pretty solid B on it at any rate. So
of course.
So it's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
So it's a win-win that way as well. That brings us to the end of the very first edition of the Desi Review System Cricket Podcast, or as we call it, the DRS Cricket Pod. It's also our Twitter handle. You can find us on Twitter at DRS Cricket Pod. Do follow us there, and you can find us on any of the podcatching platforms that you use. So please subscribe to our podcast, listen to this episode, and let us know what you thought. Let Clive and Vinayak know as well. You can find Clive on Twitter at Vanilla Wala, Wala with two L's. You can find Vinayak on Twitter as well at Vinayak M. Vinayak is with two K's. And you can find me on Twitter at Tariq Laskar. That's Tariq, L-A-S-K-R, Laskar. So let us know what you thought of this episode. And also subscribe to our podcast and let us know what games you might want featured. We will see if we can feature them and maybe even feature contributors on this podcast. It was a pleasure bringing you back memories of this game and analyzing this game. We could probably do it all night, really. We have to put a stop somewhere. Once again, thank you so much for joining us, Clive.
Thanks, Tariq.
And bringing this whole project together, because this is Clive's brainchild and he's the one who's got the whole podcast together. Thanks a lot for your time and your reflections, Vinayak. Like I said, most unique viewpoint here because you had not seen the match originally.
Enough, Tariq. Stop reminding me about it. Good night. And thanks for hosting.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
Full toss. They go for the single this time. A throw and a miss. They're going to get back for two. India.